You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the couch, as you always are here. I'm Dr. Michelle Cohen, and have an amazing guest for you today. Well, I always have great guests, but this gentleman, you are going to learn a lot from what he has to say. And let me just kind of roll into this I always try to talk about my patients, not my patients particularly, individuals or anything, but some of the issues that I hear in my practice here on the couch. And some of the most common things I hear from people are statements like, you know, I'm doing the job of three people. And I can't quit because I need to pay my rent, my healthcare costs. I have a family. I don't think my company cares about me. What else have I heard? I really like to get into a relationship. It's a hassle to date. I also want more friends. You know, I want to find more hobbies, but I have imposter syndrome. I think people aren't going to like me and think that I'm phony, whatever. Or I work so hard to keep my job just to do enough. You know, I'm in deep financially, and also our company may be bought out by another company. How many times have you heard somebody say this, or if that's you? Well, don't go anywhere, because today you're going to find out how to manage these issues with my special guest. Here he is, Simon Bailey. Simon!
How are you, Dr. Michelle? Good to be with you.
Oh, I'm great. Thank you so much for being here with me. I have been looking forward to talking with you for a long time.
And here we are, finally.
Here we are. Woohoo! So, you know, Simon is going to help you manage some of these worries that we talked about and become resilient, not only in the workplace, but in personal and social situations. And we're talking about his latest book. It's called Resilience at Work, How to Coach Yourself into a Thriving Future. And what a great book. Thank you so much for writing this. I really appreciated it.
Thank you.
Good read, Simon.
Thank you.
Really a fine read. If it's okay, I'll just kind of roll into your bio. So everybody kind of knows who you are, and I put it out on social media, but I'll try to keep it short and sweet, but we could talk for another half an hour about you and your background. But you've had a career spanning over 30 years. What? What? Did you start when you were 10?
Yes.
Simon is a globally recognized gentleman as an award-winning keynote speaker, a distinguished and successful coach, really great coaching. Oh, he's worked with so many people. I can't even drop names. I don't want to do that. Also, he's an esteemed author, his influence extending to 2,300 companies across 100 countries is a testament to his ability to empower a diverse array of individuals and corporate teams. And he believes, you know him, he's the brilliance guy, that brilliance thrives within each person. And he's dedicated to helping individuals, organizations, and foster self-actualization and innovation in all environments. So, again, I could talk on and on about what's going on with you, Simon, but I just want to get on with it so people can learn how to be more resilient in their life. So, yes, the first. Yes.
After that introduction, I want to meet this guy.
Look in the mirror. Okay. No. So, you know, I really common question, but I always love to start out by, you know, what was it that made you say, whoa, resilience, I am going to write a book on that?
I reached a point where I stopped feeling sorry for myself. I stopped beating myself up because of past mistakes. And I began to realize that resilience doesn't happen overnight. It happens over time when you embrace the truth of where you are in your journey.
Ooh, wow. I love that. You were feeling sorry for yourself. How could you do that? You're super. You're awesome.
That's the outward projection. But internally, I was crying and hurting on the inside. And I had been going to therapy, and really therapy unlocked a lot of unfinished business that I needed to address.
Well, bless your heart. That's really cool to hear. You know, and I'm so glad. I think everybody has something, right? We all have stuff. So good for you. And you are really an international leader. And so let's talk about how you define resilience. What is that all about?
So I define resilience as the ability to bounce back better, to bend, not break. But we also did some research in our State of the Working America report, and we asked working Americans, how do they define resilience? And they defined it as perseverance, problem solving, and grit.
I like that. I really like that. So that was really a significant study that you guys did. I mean, that was amazing. Because you did, you really studied all about resilience and how people thought about it. And it makes a lot of sense. So what would you kind of like viewers and listeners to take away from your book? And we're going to get into it. So
I think the first benefit for everyone listening to us is to understand you can take control of the steering wheel of your life, and you don't allow fear and worry to be the backseat passengers that drive you into the future. That's number one. Mm. Number two, I invite you into a parable, into a story for you to discover yourself and then decide your next step. So I'm not telling you, I'm inviting you. And I think the third thing is you answer three questions that create the roadmap for you to thrive in your future.
So we'll talk about those questions in just a bit. Well, let's talk about them right now. What are those kind of three questions that we need to really observe and ask ourselves?
So the first question is, what do you want for you? And the reason that question is important is because oftentimes we take care of others before we take care of ourselves. And that is the cognitive question that invites you to say, you know what? What I want wants me. And when I honor what I want, then you decide to create that path to move.
Wow. A lot of people say to me, I am so stuck in a rut. You know, I've been doing the same thing. I know my stuff. I can thrive at work, or I can hang in there and make decent money. But there's, you know, something that happens. We lose ourselves, you know, in our everyday responsibilities and our work, and you know, cool, we could be having a pretty smooth life per se, but there's something digging in there. What do you want for you? And I'm not saying jump out of that job. What, you know, I think a lot of folks are just, they've got that inner, there's an itch going on that says, I need more. So what are some of the ways that people can sort of figure out, what do I really want? Because I think, right? Don't you think we've been covered up by a lot of stuff out there, gotta do's and things like that?
So when you answer the question, you actually give yourself permission to say, what makes me come alive? What brings me joy? Where's my spark? What if people told me that I'm really good at? Ooh. And you begin to honor that critical feedback, you then begin to build your confidence from within and begin to say, you know, here's what I can do instead of what I can't do.
Oh, wow. That's lovely. You know, and sometimes you're right. Sometimes we really don't see what we want or what we're good at. And it's kind of cool when people say, wow, well, I see that you're really amazing at whatever. And we don't even, we're not aware of that, but others do. So what is the second question we have to ask ourselves, Simon?
So the second question is, what are you feeling about the thing that you want? And the reason that is so important is we suppress our feelings from time to time because we think, what are others going to think if I really express how I feel?
Right? Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. And the moment you say
that's the truth. So how do we?
So you, first of all, you got to articulate it. You got to put it out, you know?
Yep. That's self-doubt, right? I mean, it's that little creepy self-doubt that comes in. It says, what if others think, who cares, right?
Exactly.
I guess.
Exactly.
Kind of hard to go there sometimes, though, right? Because we're so socially interweaved these days, not necessarily in person, but virtually all the time. What would others think? So the third question we have to ask ourselves is,
what step are you willing to take to get what you want? And we're not looking for something really big. It's one micro step, one phone call, a text, putting one foot in front of the other. It's just a little action that you do consistently over time.
Yeah, no, I think that's some of the hardest things for people to do. The most difficult is to take that first step and just to go for, hold your breath, close your eyes, and jump in the pool, right? Just do it. And you can dip your toe in the water and like you said, just take that first little, you know, that micro step, right?
That's where it starts. And for me, I just recently learned how to swim. There was an experience that happened years ago and I never wanted to go swimming. So sure. Who wants to learn how to swim after 50 years of age? And I totally went for it. I had a great instructor and now I love swimming, but it first started with the first lesson.
You know, good for you. That is so, you know, there's a lot of other people I know. You know, I have some friends here who actually have had some pretty negative experiences when they were growing up in water. In pools or the ocean or whatever. And they started taking swimming lessons. So you go, good for you, honey. So you did it and now you enjoy it and you can cool off in the summer and and just swim and not impact your back by that great exercise. So good for you. Let's talk about your book, Resilience at Work. And some of the characters. Speaking about swimming, you're talking about surfers.
Yes.
So if you can elaborate on the surfer characters and who they represent, that would be great.
So Dr. Michelle, the four characters plus one that are introduced in the book is hurry, worry, ready, steady, plus curious.
Oh. And
they meet at a surfing camp. And at the end of each lesson, they go and sit by a campfire. And in that campfire, Hurry and Worry begin to listen to Ready and Steady as to how did they become resilient and thrive.
Uh-huh.
And so they begin to unpack their story.
Yeah.
And as they're unpacking their story, every person is learning through the lens of the other because sometimes you can't see the picture when you're in the frame.
Sure.
So they're sharing their story. And it's the storytelling that creates the breakthrough for everyone listening.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's cool. So what are some of the things that Hurry and Worry think about or are just holding them back?
Hurry is there's never enough time in the day. I'm so busy, not necessarily effective, chasing after the next big opportunity, never slowing down to the speed of the moment. Worry, on the other hand, is waiting for the other shoe to drop. Bad news is happening all around worry, and worry is concerned. Oh my goodness, this just happened, and they build up an entire story of what happened, and the story becomes more powerful than what happened, and it causes stress, anxiety, and at some level for them to kind of shut down. So
wow.
Ready and Steady, invite them into a self-discovery conversation.
Mm-hmm. And what's really cool is in your book, it's also a workbook because it encourages readers to take the self-test to see how much like those characters Hurry and Worry they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think folks would be really surprised that they're going to be checking off a lot of the boxes and you have a scoring system and everything. So, yeah, that's terrific. I really like that. So people can self-monitor and do part of the work within themselves. Because sometimes, like I said, you know, we just get into such a rhythm. Mm-hmm. We're just used to, you know, hurrying and worrying and being on the treadmill and just living life. And we're not really living life, right? A lot of people are just not getting it. But that's okay. No judgment. Right. It's just, are you happy? Are you thriving? So what are some of the qualities of the folks steady and ready? I mean, they're hanging out there at the campfire and they're saying, girls, guys, come on, ask yourself these questions. What are some of those positive characteristics of steady and ready?
So calmness is one of the positive characteristics of steady. You can show up in their presence and they are totally locked in. The other interesting thing about steady is having this ability to listen, not just hear, to connect, not just communicate, and to ask, not just tell.
Ooh, wow. How many people don't do those things, right? You hear that all the time in your practice.
Everybody's on edge at some level. And you meet a calm person, and a calm person is totally present to the moment. Wherever their feet are, they are right there.
Right.
They're experiencing that moment with you real time.
Yes.
And ready is this positive person that has been to hell and back and has chosen to look through the windshield of where they're going instead of the rearview mirror of where they've been. Ooh. So their whole disposition is, how do we move forward? Even though stuff in life has happened, how do we get back up on the surfboard and catch the next wave?
Ooh.
The ready personality archetype.
I love that. I love both of those. I love steady and ready. And I think, you know, again, in your book, you have a lot of information for folks about how to be a little bit more like steady. How to present yourself, how to pull back, how to think about yourself, and how, you know, if you're going to think about what others think about you, you might as well think about being steady, the characteristics of calmness. How am I speaking? How am I, right? Am I on something?
You're spot on. Yes.
Kind of think about how you present yourself.
Mm-hmm. How am I being in the moment? Because everybody feeds off of your energy. And what's interesting about steady and ready, they understand when worry and hurry show up, how do they hear, heal, and help?
Yeah, exactly. And I think becoming, the more we practice something such as the characteristics that steady has, the more it becomes part of who we are. It's much easier to do all that, right? I mean, anything, the more we practice, right?
Precisely.
So what are some of the ways in which we can become more like steady?
I think the first thing is to be grateful and at the end of the day, reflect on what went well today instead of what didn't go well.
Oh, yes.
The second thing is, what is right about you? And literally take out a sheet of paper and write it, W-R-I-T-E, write it down. What's right about you? Because so many times we are looking at a movie that says what's wrong with us. And we can totally rewrite the script and project onto the imagination of our mind a new reality that's emerging. And I think third thing is to upgrade our verbal software, because which is the software of the mind. In the moment you upgrade your verbal software, what you are doing is you've decided to hit the control alt delete button to delete from your mind drive and your hard drive those things that slow you down. And now you're saying, here's where I'm going because of the power of your language.
Mm. Wow, that's beautiful. That's really well said. And a lot of it, you know, is also, I love it, that a lot of it is also sort of in the middle of cognitive behavioral therapy, as we say, CBT, and also knowingness. and tuning in, being more empathic, right? I mean, doesn't that happen when you're a steady person, when you are calmer and you feel good pretty much about who you are? You just consciously try to be focused on now, things like that. So doesn't that happen more, that we become more empathic and we come into a room, we sort of feel what's going on, you know?
You said something very powerful, Dr. Michelle. When you're totally present to another, you move from me to we. So it's not about what's happening for me in this moment and how can I get something from you. When I'm totally present to the moment and I'm present to you, it's about what can I give to you. And giving sometimes is just showing up with a simple question, how are you? And it's the how are you that becomes the breakthrough, where that person feels that they've just been hugged by your words because you said, how are you?
Right. No, that's lovely. And don't you think a lot of people, I mean, it's just a thing. You know, how are you? How are you today? How are you doing today? And the other person's off. They're like, it's just things we say to be gracious.
Yes.
But we're not really present.
And so that's why we have to slow down to the speed of the moment. And when we say, how are you? And it's in that intentionality where the other person on the receiving end of the question knows in that moment that they are seen, they are valued, and they are understood just with your question.
Oh, that's really, truly beautifully said. And again, the more we practice that kind of thing and become more present, it's really important to do. So about ready, the ready person is there, as you described. The ready person is looking at, okay, I've done this, I'm looking back, I've learned a lot, now I'm ready to step into anew, take those baby steps or those micro steps, whatever that takes. You know, what do you say to people who say, I am really ready, but I just can't quite make it. I can't take that first step. What's holding me back? So what would you say to these people?
I would say, is there somewhere in your life where you have not forgiven yourself, that you have your foot, both feet on the pedal and the brake at the same time, and you can't move forward? So first of all, forgive yourself, and then begin to say, what does the future look like today? Because the future is created in the present. Ooh. So it's one micro step that you can take, going to a class, picking up the phone, writing a letter. And I know that's old school, but sometimes it becomes therapeutic. If you think it, ink it, write it out, and just get moving.
No, it's really true. And I know that you've studied this and talk about this as well. It's that old concept of the psychocybernetics of that old school book about, yes, you know, how athletes, Olympians that we're watching right now, I mean, they have been trained to visualize and feel and be there and see it and embrace it. Grow those neural patterns that are saying, I've been there, I've done that, but I did it all in imagination. Can you explain a little bit more about that, how we can create that to be ready?
So being ready starts with your meditation at the very beginning of the day, where you take time to see the future in the present. And then you begin to feel it, you begin to touch it, you begin to speak it. And then you stand up as if, William James taught us, as if it's happening real time. So in other words, you're rehearsing the future before the future emerges for you. So whenever you go to the movies, they show previews before the movie starts. Yeah. It's a preview of a coming attraction. So go through that behavior every single day of the sneak preview of the coming you.
Yes, I love that. beautifully said, Simon. I mean, that is so true. Ah, that's the thing. And then, you know, I was really blessed to also, besides being able to interview you, to interview Dr. Joe Dispenza. And he was telling me about the, you know, thoughts that fire together, wire together, and, you know, the whole thing about how we solidify neural patterns. And the more we feel or think something, and this is old science as well, I mean, it's nothing new, but the more neural patterns we grow depending on what we're thinking. So, So you're right. If we can get up and do that meditation, whatever that is, you know, and really focus on your future, what you'd like, make that movie, and then keep doing it every day. And I think a lot of people, you know, they always have that self-doubt that comes in and says, yeah, but I'm sure you deal with a lot of people that say, Simon, that's brilliant. Thank you. But yeah, but I can't do it because how do you address people that say that all the time?
I think choosing every day to move past your past by your actions. The moment you start your day, do you make up your bed? And I know that's something so simple, but it's that routine of making up your bed, even if you're going from your bed down to your office, never leaving your house, but the ability to create this essence within yourself. I make my bed, I take a shower, I get dressed, I meditate, I affirm myself. You're giving yourself a pat on the back even before your day starts. So no matter what happens during that day, you have decided to take control of the day.
Ooh. Right. And I that makes a lot of sense, you know, brilliantly said. And I think you're right. And if we have more control or feel like we have more control in our lives, then it makes us calmer. I mean, it all fits together, right? We have control. By the way, my special guest here, as you can see, is you're Dr. Simon Bailey, all right?
I'm Simon.
Sure. You got your PhD. Come on now. You know. The book, Resilience at Work. And he's not only talking about work in your workplace, he's talking about all over life. Life is work sometimes. And I'm not being negative, I'm just saying. How to coach yourself into a thriving future. We're rolling out the characters in the book who are amazing, Hurry and Worry and Thriving, who are not thriving, rather, and Steady and Ready, who are thriving, and all those wonderful characteristics. And the wisdom that Steady and Ready give to Hurry and Worry. And they're learning, and they're really, you know, trying to figure out what to do in their lives and the best steps to take. And I appreciate the way that you presented this book, because it's a really cool story. It's a visual, you know, you have these surfers that are coming together and they're all around the campfire. And these guys are giving these women, guys, other people who are surfers, really good advice. And it's the visual really works. It's not just like a how-to book. It's a let's create a story. And are you any of these characters? So I really appreciate the way you do that. Resilience at work. So, when you talk about meditation, a lot of people have different ways of doing that. Is there any particular way that you would recommend that people meditate in the morning, or anything that would be helpful?
I was taught by my mentor, Dr. Jean Watson, who's a pioneer in caring science, and she taught us centering. And centering is just literally taking a deep breath three times, inhaling for 3 seconds, exhaling for 7 seconds, and being in that moment. And what you're doing in that meditation and centering is realigning your head, your heart, and your hands, because it's all in the breath.
Right. I guess, you know, it really is. And Yeah, they say that, you know, when we're feeling relaxed or we're feeling good and something's been done, or you know, we're pensive about something, we sigh, right? It's that sigh. And I think what you're describing is the sigh, which does calm our body and our mind. It's 3 seconds in a, right?
Yes.
And it's sort of signaling our brain on our body, oh, you're sighing. Oh, that's a good thing. You know, right? Yes. Is that?
Yes.
Am I to that? Yeah. So let's talk about some of the things that Worry and Hurry learn in the book after days of surfing and learning the tools and some of the other things that, you know, these Hurry and Worry people are really getting finally. And they're, okay, they're in surf camp and they're saying, okay, and they're pondering these things.
Yeah. So what's interesting about Hurry's journey is Hurry learned the power of being diligent, focusing on the quality of making a difference instead of the quantity of a lot of activity. Ooh. That's all happening at once instead of just moving all around, doing a lot of things. Let's just be diligent. And then Worry evolves into being content to understand, I may not know what the future holds, but when the future unfolds, I have the wherewithal to stand in my strength, to stand in my power, and to respond, not react, to respond in the most appropriate manner. And wow. Then Curious, who was the fifth personality archetype that was outside of the circle, Curious becomes fearless by understanding, how do I show up and ask questions and learn, unlearn, and relearn?
Yeah. Well, that I like Curious, because it doesn't have to get into the whole energy of, you know, but observer, the observer, right? Mm-hmm. And learning and taking things in. So, no, I really appreciate that. It makes sense. How does the future unfold? How can I create this? Do you think that we attract like-minded people? Or do you think things come to us randomly, Simon, that we need to learn? Or what is your theory about that?
So I'm going to sound a little biased here, but I believe you attract what you are. You attract what you vibrate into the universe. So yeah. All of a sudden, people show up in your force field, and it becomes a moment of serendipity, and you bump into something because you put it out there. You either thought about it, you wrote about it, you said it, you internalized, you believed it, and then all of a sudden it manifests itself. Yes. Because of what you were literally vibrating into the universe.
You know, now you're talking my language, because I totally nerd out to a quantum consciousness. You know, that's my whole thing I'm trying to study. I'm still a student and I always will be. But I mean, right, exactly. I am 100% in agreement with you. And that which we put out is what we get back. And not only in action, of course, physical action, but I mean, and in thought, the photonic universe, we're all connected, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's really, I love hearing you say that, because I mean, it is, I think it's reality. But I think, as Hurry and Worry do, we go by our lives so quickly every day. It's got to do. And we're all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't meditated that morning. We haven't centered ourselves. We're all over the place. And we're sending out mixed messages. Ah,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Do you think that's sort of confusing? So the universe or whatever, the quantum thought thing, is bringing back a lot of confusion to us, and or people who are not quite suited to be positive. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes, I do, Dr. Michelle, because I think we need to add balance, because there's someone listening to us and says, what happens when something shows up and a woman is raped, a child is killed, a person hit by a car, like did I attract that into my life? So I think we have to add a little balance to it. And what I would say is, when you're living life in the matrix, bad things do happen to good people. And when they do happen, it is your choice to respond in the most healthy way. And the healthy way means, have I done the work on myself to know that this is a moment of resilience for me not to tuck my tail and turn around and run away, but to face it, this has happened. And how do I become a better human being in this matrix, in this moment, and grow from it, despite it being the worst thing you could have ever imagined?
And that is heavy. Thank you for that. I mean, that is, I think, one of the most difficult things in the book, Why Bad Things Happen to Good People. I mean, again, if you're interested in folks out there, you know, in the universal consciousness or whatever those buzzwords are, you know, it is a thing. And I think the more scattered you are in your thoughts and worries and hurries as your characters, you're putting that out there. You're not being in the now. And even if someone comes from nowhere, let's say someone 14 years ago, as in an example, some woman ran a red light and nailed my husband and I. I mean, clearly we were going through the green. Unfortunately, happened to be right in the middle of the intersection when this person in a humongous SUV nailed us. We, you know, airbags exploding, other cars spinning, and we got out. We're sitting on the sidelines. Please come, and we're saying, "Why? Why us? Why?" You know, that kind of thing. So it's important to realize how you can deal with it the best way. Is that what you're saying?
Focus on. Yes. Number one, it's happened. Number two, how am I supposed to show up and be in this moment? You're a human being, not a human doing. So how do I be in this moment? And then the third thing is, what is the way forward? And that way forward is, what can I do instead of what I can't do? And it moves you out from moving to chronic worry and chronic stress and all of a sudden feeling agitated, to slow down to the moment and say, okay, I'm going to grow from this, but I'm going to honor how I'm feeling right now and let the feeling pass through so that you can move forward in your future and not get stuck in yesterday.
Wow. You speak so beautifully. Really, I'm just, thank you for that. How do you speak with people who are, you know, getting into, and this is helping me so much, by the way, thank you, because I work with people who have anxiety disorders. We call it generalized anxiety, and they're always kind of rolling back to that moment. Woo, you know, it's sort of a PTSD trait in a way. You have those flashbulb moments of the moment I was diagnosed, or the moment someone hit me, or the moment. So how do you think people could reframe their super anxiety? And I know you just gave us some great ideas about learning and feeling and all that. Are there any other, you know, tools that you have that you can share?
So I think worry and hurry are invited to begin to go back to a moment in time when they were thriving in joy and happiness, what many experts called flow.
Yeah.
Because it's in accessing the joy, the happiness, and the flow that causes an individual to spiral up instead of spiraling down. Because they go to a moment in time when they were thriving at their best, not surviving, thriving. Yeah. And all of a sudden, they begin to realize they have the tools. They have a snapshot of yesterday that's in the photo album of their memory. And when they access that joy it allows them to turn the page and say, guess what? I can create the future instead of having it created for me.
So are we in control of other people? I mean, a lot of people say, oh, I have to talk to my relative and I have to tell them how they are, or my friend or my partner, my spouse, whatever. And they're wrong. And I have to tell them, I have to tell them who they are and what they are. We're not in control of other people. We can't change other people necessarily unless they're really willing to listen. Would you say that, Simon?
Absolutely. Trying to change other people is hard work. And you burn yourself and you hit your head on the wall and it interrupts your sleep. And I don't know about you, I like my sleep.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's one of, you know, when you go in and you list things, you know, for, I don't know, whatever companies or groups you're joining or something, you say hobbies. My number one hobby says sleep. It's like, oh, you're a fascinating person. Really? Okay. So, no, but you can't change anybody.
No.
Right?
But you can show up to be a mirror to reflect back to them how they're showing up in the world and inviting them to say, hey, is this how you want me to perceive you or others to perceive you, as being more negative than an undeveloped piece of film? Or is there an opportunity for you to grow? So you're inviting them into a conversation to self-discover without telling them that you better change. So it's in that, it's that appreciative inquiry where now they're like, whoa, you just asked me a question that I don't have the answer for. And I realize I got to do some work.
Wow. That is so true. And I know you're an international speaker and you're speaking to a lot of people, but I'm sure that you experience a situation where people say, well, this person's always wrong because they do this and I'm trying to get them to change. Or couples. That's another thing. I know you dealt with a lot of couples, you see. You know, and it's like, you think they're wrong. Okay, maybe their behaviors are unhealthy. But do you think that if we change ourselves, that others will change? I don't know. What do you think?
I believe if we change ourselves, what happens is the people around us either stay connected or they fall off.
Yeah.
What you'll discover is there's some people in your life that reach a natural expiration date of that relationship where you have outgrown them, they have outgrown you, and you move on.
I hear you. And it's difficult to think that because we want to kind of change and we want to hang on and we want to, you know, fix it or whatever that is. But true that. I think a lot of people, the energy is just not happening anymore, you know, mm-hmm. and we have to just let that organically happen to, you know, when our vibes are, we're putting it out there and we're trying and we're just being in positive. And if people aren't on the same page, I guess it just kind of fades away naturally, I guess.
Yes.
But I think you're right. Let's talk a little bit about brilliance. And I know your last book, your Brilliance book was brilliant, and it really inspired so many people. So you talk about how to have resilience with brilliance. Can you just sort of share that concept a little bit, Simon?
Yeah. So here's the visual. In life, you're knocked off your surfboard because of uncertainty, but it's your resilience that gets you back on the surfboard, and it's your brilliance that allows you to catch the next wave. We asked Americans in our research, how do they define brilliance? And they define brilliance as confidence, intelligence, and creativity. So in other words, for me to unlock productivity, perseverance, and grit, which is resilience, once I tap into that, I'm more creative, I'm more confident in how I show up in the world. And what's even more powerful is I have that confidence that the future is going to be better because I'm showing up in a new way.
Right. It all kind of rolls out together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're a very humble guy, and I really love that. And I think a lot of people who I deal with or work with, you know, they say, oh, well, that's narcissistic. You know, I'm brilliant. It's like, no. You know, we as humans, man, I mean, those parts of those brain, our brains that we have not opened yet, whatever that might be, the pineal gland or the, you know, whatever that we can do in our meditations. And it's like, we are blessed with the ability to heal ourselves, I think, right?
Yes. We really are.
Brilliance.
Yeah, we have to own our brilliance. Mm-hmm. We have to own it.
So I think owning it is not narcissistic. It's the real deal about the human being. And you know, the way we have been created. This is, I think, part of our journey. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more to understand how brilliant we really are?
Yeah. So when you think about it, everyone has what I would call a universal assignment. And your universal assignment is to walk in your brilliance and making the world a better place wherever you show up. That could be your neighbor next door to you or across the street, or, you know, starting a business or helping someone who's the least, the last, the lost. But when you show up to fulfill your universal assignment, you make a dent in the universe. And we know that you were here, because what happens is, when I'm in my brilliance, I move from here I am to there you are. Yes. Where have you been? And that's what the world needs.
I love that. You know, it's so true. And, you know, making the world a better place is brilliant, because we all possess it. And it's, you know, just working on that inner person, feel your feelings. And as you said, and my whole thing back in the 80s, I was all into love that which you are. And it's okay. No matter what. Stop beating yourself up. Okay, you screwed up. So what? We all are goofy. We all say dumb things. We all mess up. We all get fired, most of us. We all get hurt in relationships. We all suffer. Welcome to being a human. And what did I learn from it? Right?
Yes.
So, I mean, yeah, I think that's, you know, your point. And I love your wisdom and your humility. And so with that being said, what is the best way that viewers and listeners can find out more about you, get you, if they ever can, book you in the future to be a brilliant speaker for them, and also pick up all your books, especially your wonderful, thriving book, Resilience at Work, How to Coach Yourself into a Thriving Future. What's the best way?
Well, first of all, Dr. Michelle, you are a great, great human being. Thank you so much. Individuals can find me at simontbailey.com. T for terrific. simontbailey.com.
I love it. All right. That's easy. Bada boom. There you go, folks. And all of his books are on Amazon as well and anywhere. Yeah. Go into that. Get yourself into that brick and mortar store. Lots of fun. You know, walk around and find Simon Bailey's books. And they are brilliant. Thank you so much for being here on the couch. It was cool. It was really great interviewing you. I wish we had another hour, but oh well.
Next time.
Next time. All righty. Thank you for all you do. Okay, everybody. Thanks for joining me here on the couch. Dr. Michelle here. Talk to you next week. And do take care of yourself first, and then you'll be good for others. Bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.